Ms. L. Rabati.
That's correct. Good morning. Esteemed panel, my name is Nadra El Rabati, and I represent Ms. Monica Salata, the appellant plaintiff in this matter. The record reflects that this is a premises liability case that was a trial ready and dismissed for want of prosecution before the district court. The crux of our argument is that the district court abused its discretion when it dismissed the matter for want of prosecution, while also entering an order dismissing the matter with prejudice based on allegations of unsatisfactory discovery compliance. The record is clear that the plaintiff, Ms. Salata, sat for a deposition. Her housekeeping clients sat for depositions. She sat for an independent medical evaluation, wherein that doctor was also deposed. Her surgeon also deposed. The appellees maintained a position throughout that there were these outstanding supplements to production. And after multiple case management conferences, the district court felt that, hey, maybe there must be something missing here. The matter was set for a regular case management on March 26, 2013. In advance of our next case management conference, the defendants filed a motion to dismiss 2 weeks outside of that case management, which goes beyond the court rules that the district court implored should be followed. The matter was not properly noticed, and the appellant was not present for this March 12th motion to dismiss. Procedurally, the matter had 8 depositions go forward. A mediation had also proceeded where offers to settle this matter were made, upwards of $125,000. There was a dismissal for want of prosecution. We appeared before the district court, and the district court said, you have 21 days to satisfy the defendant's claimed deficiencies. The appellants then returned within those 21 days and supplemented again with these additional insufficiencies, because the defendants continue to file motions to compel and what they're calling supplemental requests for production. To satisfy the court and the appellees, Ms. Salata was present in court and an additional supplement was given to the court. The court acknowledged receipt and acknowledged that they were aware that she had an ongoing workers' comp action and 2 future surgeries. The insufficiencies claimed were non-existent. The deposition proceeded, and as I mentioned before, offers to settle this case were made. On March 26th is when we first learned of the dismissal. It was still within a timely matter. We filed the motion to vacate. The court indicated it was inclined to grant that motion to vacate and reinstate the case. Throughout the briefing schedule of plaintiff's motion to vacate that dismissal for want of prosecution, the appellees brought a second motion to dismiss while the case was already closed. That motion to dismiss alleged again that there were insufficiencies that prejudiced their case in this the defense of their premises liability case. The defendants unilaterally changed our briefing schedule dates. August 6th, August 8th were no longer on the calendar. The appellant went to court on these dates and learned through the clerks that the case was moved to August 30th. Unilaterally, the dates were changed, and the defendants were allowed to control the briefing schedule of the plaintiff appellant's motion to set aside this DWP. If you look at the court's ruling in the August 30th date, it acknowledged that, well, maybe this was more of a dismissal for want of prosecution because the court believed that there were some sort of deficiencies in the supplements, even though it acknowledged receiving our supplemental production. At that point in time, without notice, the court indicated, well, can you pay their defense costs of approximately $16,000? Without notice, the appellant who was present indicated that she could not pay this what purported to be a sanction of their defense costs from the inception of the case. The record is clear that the entire matter was trial ready, and there was no lack of there was no evidence of any contumacious disregard of the plaintiff. Her actions in this case were clear. The defendants presented evidence to the district court that Ms. Salata presented some untruthfulness in that she was being surveilled at home. Her 3- and 4-year-old children were on video surveillance. The father of her children also, the mother, the father of the plaintiff, trying to claim, well, she must not be hurt. She's been working. And apparently there was video of some activities some 5 years after this incident. The record's clear here that the defendants misrepresented the deficiencies to the district court, and those deficiencies left a negative impression upon the district court in that the court believed that there were deficiencies.
Well, there can't be too much argument about that because there were discovery requests that were never responded to or that were only incompletely responded to for a period of many, many months and many hearings scheduled to address the deficiencies which were blown off, apparently.
And that's we wholeheartedly disagree with that, Judge. If you notice, they're called supplements. What they're claiming is, what else is there? They didn't believe that that was it.
There was a whole set of interrogatories that were never responded to, apparently. There's two sets of interrogatories served. One is incompletely responded to, the other is not responded to at all. And then there's a series of hearings that are set, motions to compel, and then hearings that are set beginning in the fall of 2012, continuing through the winter and spring of 2013. And you're a no-show at a bunch of those, and so they move to dismiss for failure to prosecute and failure to comply with discovery, and that's what the motion that the court grants when there's no response to it.
There were responses, Your Honor. That's where the inaccuracies lie. There was a prior attorney before this office came into the case. Discovery was stayed when the matter was set for mediation. There was a mediation held, and there were offers and settlement offers made on the case. Ms. Salata was deposed, and the supplemental requests for production were the ones that were at issue. Her income tax returns, whether or not she was making a wage loss claim, and what her future medicals are. Because Ms. Salata faced difficulties with insurance and the ongoing workers' comp claim, she had not yet disclosed whether or not she was getting a surgery for her back. Within that 21-day time frame, the district court said satisfy their insufficiencies, and any preceding allegations of whatever was insufficient was was after that mediation and after the deposition had been held. What they're highlighting are discovery requests made well before the mediation and well before the deposition took place.
When did you take over the case? Was it before or after this mediation?
It was after the mediation.
Yeah, there's a lot that went on before that you're obviously you weren't responsible for, but there seems to be an awful lot of gaps, and whether or not she's working, did she have her own business? You know, a lot of things that for reasons, maybe that reason, they didn't really want to answer all the interrogatories. But you came in later, and I assume since that time there haven't been any of these missed hearings and that sort of thing.
There was the March 12th date, which was missed, and our position was we didn't have notice of it. It was outside of the March 26, 2013 regularly set case management conference. When the court ruled, they ultimately decided that this was a dismissal for want of prosecution, which was without prejudice. They also then ruled that it was a dismissal via their motion to dismiss because they believed that there were still insufficiencies.
She only had one no-show, I guess.
It was the one no-show, which was a motion outside of the calendar. And when we appeared before the district court, the record shows that the district court said we are inclined to reinstate. It was one missed no-show on a motion. And the insufficiencies again were addressed and were brought before the court's attention and hand-delivered to the district court. district court acknowledged receipt, tax returns, and what those two future surgeries were. The discovery is completed. There's nothing else that's owed. There's no prejudice to the defendant. There were offers made to get to dispose of this case via settlement. The sanction here as to impose the nearly $20,000 of defense costs, which were only given, which were only presented to the plaintiff appellant on the date of that hearing, it constitutes an abuse of power, and there was no notice that that sanction would be imposed as a condition for reinstatement when we brought our motion to vacate the DWP.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Reese.
Good morning, and may it please the court, counsel. My name is Mike Reese, and I'm here today for the defendant appellee. The district court did not abuse its discretion in granting the motion to dismiss and in denying the plaintiff's motion to reinstate due to her continuing failure to comply with written discovery. The court should be affirmed. The record shows the plaintiff was first ordered to comply with outstanding discovery when our motion to compel was granted on November 27, 2012. At that point, the plaintiff had not answered six from the first set of interrogatories going back to October of 2010, that's 2 years, and none of a second set of interrogatories for 9 months going back to February of 2012, which is when counsel stepped into the case. These interrogatories and the related production requests related to the plaintiff's damages, pre-existing injuries, other lawsuits, employment, lost wages, and sources of income. She didn't answer that outstanding discovery by the court-imposed deadline of January 2, 2013, and her attorney did not appear for a court-ordered status on January 31, 2013. That order is in the record. She didn't just miss the March 12 hearing date. Now, after we didn't get the written discovery, and she didn't show up at a status hearing, we filed a motion to dismiss on February 26, which was heard and granted on March 12. Counsel's only excuse for her absence from that hearing is she says she didn't receive the notice of the motion. However, every notice, every motion, every order before and after that March 12 date was sent to the same registered email address via the court's CM ECF system. She has never explained how it was that she could receive everything earlier and everything later, but not the notice for the March hearing. And she certainly knew before the March 12 hearing that our motion to compel had been granted on November 27, that the discovery was not answered, that it was due on January 2nd, that there was a status hearing set for January 31, and yet the discovery remained unanswered. She ignored or did not meet the court deadline, and she didn't attend the status date. Plaintiff's counsel and the plaintiff herself, her conduct did not improve after the dismissal when the motion to reinstate was filed on May 9. She still didn't comply with the outstanding discovery. When she finally filed what she called supplemental responses in July, they only showed that she never took the discovery seriously in the first place. Going back to October 2010 and again in her deposition in December 2010, she said she had not worked since the accident. Zero work. We quoted the relevant portion of the discovery deposition in our brief. Yet in her supplemental answers, for the first time, she disclosed that yes, she had worked as an office clerk beginning in 2009, and she also disclosed that she had worked in housekeeping, janitorial and cleaning work for a new employer, Prime Maintenance, back in 2008 that she never disclosed in her first set of interrogatories. She never identified who her employer was for her work as an office clerk in 2009 going forward, or any of the other information that we asked about in the second set of interrogatories, despite the fact that this information had been requested And she still didn't give us those answers when the district court, exhibiting great patience, finally had no choice but to deny her motion to reinstate. Now, discovery is above all a search for the truth. It is not a game of hide the ball. We could take the deposition of the plaintiff, we could serve discovery, but without truthful and complete answers, the case was not in a posture ready for settlement or certified ready for trial.
Was there an offer?
I'm sorry?
$125,000?
There was never an offer of $125,000, Judge. We did go to a mediation in December of 2011 before counsel had appeared in the case. And we mediated the case. We made an offer. It was not $125,000. It was not close to $125,000. It was rejected. And when counsel finally did bring up the subject, which was only after we gave her a surveillance tape that showed her client working as a housekeeper, lifting cleaning equipment out of a car trunk, 3 days after we gave her that videotape, she said, I want to accept the settlement offer that we never had actually made for $125,000. Okay? So there is no offer.
Well, that was their figure?
That was, well, they
was
had
that a
higher
demand.
They had a higher demand, but that was, at that point, I guess, what they thought they could get. What's worse about, you know, I'm glad you raised the settlement offer, because what I draw from that is that at the same time that she's not telling us about the fact that she's working and she's not answering questions about lost wages, this is after the case has been dismissed, she's trying to enforce that settlement offer. And to me, it's more than a matter of being not credible for someone to try to accept an offer that was not made, to avoid having to disclose that she had falsely testified about being unable to work since the accident going back to March of 2008. Now, as I said, the district court gave plaintiff and her counsel every opportunity to comply with discovery. There was no rush here to get this case disposed of. She and her counsel have no one else but themselves to blame for the dismissal that took place. On this record, the district court did not abuse its discretion, and the dismissal should be affirmed. There is a second point, very briefly, that I want to address. We asked for about $15,000 in the district court, and having to pursue motions to compel and then try to obtain incomplete answers to discovery. And Judge Zagel eventually, he actually remarked that he thought the amount would be higher, which, you know, you can take that for what it's worth, but made it clear that he would not reinstate in these circumstances. And our position is that, well, at that point, maybe the plaintiff should have just quit while she was ahead. Instead, they have pursued this appeal to this court. And we have asked for sanctions on the basis that the appeal is frivolous. The issue has been briefed. I'm not going to go into much detail about it, except to say that this isn't just on the plaintiff. It was the lawyer who filed the appeal. It's the lawyer who's made arguments that, quite frankly, are either a rehash of what took place in the district court or that are based on misstatements of law and the record. We keep hearing that a dismissal for want of prosecution is without prejudice. Well, under Rule 41 of the Rules of Civil Procedure, it operates as an adjudication on the merits. In the state system, a dismissal for want of prosecution is without prejudice. But in the federal system, it's not. We have a false certification in the brief concerning the appendix. The orders that are the subject of the appeal, they're not in the appendix of the brief. What's in the appendix of the brief are transcripts that were never made part of the record. The record was filed back in October. Counsel ordered the transcripts in February. They're not even really part of the record. That's not our problem, but if you're looking at this from the standpoint of how this case has been proceeding, respectfully, we think that there's been simply noncompliance. There's a record here of delay, evasiveness, noncompliance, and for all the reasons set forth in our brief, we ask you to affirm and with sanctions. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Ms. El-Rabi, your time had expired. I'll give you a minute if you have anything to say in rebuttal.
Again, the record shows that the discovery was satisfied, depositions were completed, and the matter was trial ready. I'm baffled that counsel can say that there was no offer of $125,000 when there was. Prior counsel from the Whiting Law Group indicated that, and the present attorney, who is the out-of-state Tennessee attorney, was the party to that conversation and that offer. And then a later correspondence followed that indicated that the matter was withdrawn when it was not accepted. The evidence is clear that the matter that the orders were ambiguous. It was both a dismissal without prejudice and a dismissal with prejudice. We're asking that the court remand this matter for trial. The plaintiff would like to have this matter resolved on the merits. Anything related to the credibility allegations are just that. They're allegations and they're completely unfounded. She takes this case very seriously, and the matter was dismissed for want of prosecution when there was no evidence that the matter was not fully prosecuted. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is taken under advisement.